Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. AGLCA and our Admiral sponsors, Dog River Marina and Boat Works, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guide and Magazine, Green Turtle Bay Resort, Marina Life, Richardson's Map Tech, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, and Skipper Bob Publications invite you to join us as we explore the Great Loop every Friday morning with a show chock full of information that's useful to you whether you're dreaming of, in the midst of, or planning a trip around the Great Loop. And don't forget to visit our ship store at www.greatloop.org, ship store. Thanks, and enjoy the show.
Well, welcome to all of our listeners. As you know, this is America's Great Loop Cruisers Association weekly blog show. Our home port crew, Beth and Steve, are here, and I'm Janice. And I think most of you already know what the Great Loop is, but in case we have a new audience out there, the Great Loop is the continuous waterway that includes the eastern portion of North America, including the two intracoastal waterways, the Atlantic and the Gulf, the Great Lakes, the Canadian Heritage Canals, and the inland rivers. Our association disseminates information and just keeps the spirit alive. Our website is www.greatloop.org. We'd love for you to visit. There's lots of free stuff, and we'd love for you to become a member. Our guest hosts this week are Matt Doss, who functions as the policy director of the Great Lakes Commission, and Michael Ahart, news editor of Waterway Guide. They'll be discussing the invasion of the Asian carp into the Great Lakes and the Commission's proposal to close off the Illinois River from the lakes. At any time during this newscast or radio cast, you can call in with questions or comments. The toll-free number, and jot this down, is 877-497-1815. Matt, Mike, why don't you get started with your discussion, please?
Thanks, Janice.
Well, Matt, I think one of the things we could start with is if you have a brief background on the Asian carp control effort so far, bring us up to date on the electric fence barriers and how they've worked or if they haven't, and where the carp are now. I heard actually from your website that they found one in Lake Calumet, which is actually above the electric barrier. And just bring us up to date. Let us know what the issues are.
Sure. Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate you and Janice inviting me to talk. Just briefly, let me explain that the Great Lakes Commission is an interstate agency that works on behalf of the eight states that border on the Great Lakes. We were formed in 1955, and we represent all eight states that border on the Great Lakes, and we work on a variety of issues relating to the use and management of the Great Lakes. This includes both water quality, transportation, recreational boating, fish and wildlife, and things of that nature. So we have a broad mandate to work on behalf of the states, and this issue is really a critical one for us. The Asian carp were originally brought into fish farms in the lower Mississippi River back in the 1990s, and in the early 90s they escaped because of flooding in that area, and ever since have been swimming up the river, gradually moving up closer and closer to the Great Lakes. So this has been a huge alarm for people in the Great Lakes region because we know how damaging aquatic invasive species can be. We have a long history with them in the Great Lakes, beginning with sea lamprey that invaded in the late 1800s, and by the middle of the 19th century, middle of the 20th century, they had devastated the lake trout population in the Great Lakes, which are a huge recreational and commercial fish species. And So ever since then, we've been spending up to $20 million a year just to control sea lamprey, but we're not able to totally eradicate them. More recently, in the late 80s, we saw the invasion of zebra mussels, which are a small mussel that has proliferated in the Great Lakes, and they attach themselves to boat hulls and piers and marinas and other things, and really have a they not only impact the structures and boats and water intakes, but they're also having a devastating impact on the ecology, the ecosystem of the Great Lakes, by filtering out nutrients that fish and other aquatic life need. So the bottom line is we've been heavily impacted here in the Great Lakes by aquatic invasive species. We know the damage they can do, and we're very concerned about keeping any future invasive species out of the Great Lakes, including Asian carp. So we've seen Asian carp getting closer and closer to the Great Lakes over the past decade, and as they've gotten closer, the region has become more and more alarmed. And the most likely place where they will enter the Great Lakes is through the Chicago area waterway system. They've been moving up the Mississippi River and then gradually into the Illinois River and then getting closer and closer to the Chicago area. And back in the late 1800s, the city of Chicago created an artificial connection between the Chicago River and the Illinois River, and this was the Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal, and that's the artificial connection between the Great Lakes and the Mississippi River Basin, and that's the place where carp are swimming toward Lake Michigan, and that's where we need to stop them. That's the most likely connection. Now, as I said, we've seen carp coming for more than a decade. Over that time, the region and the various state and federal and local agencies have taken a number of actions to keep our carp out. Probably the key one, as you mentioned, is there's an electric barrier in the Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal southwest of Chicago. And it basically what this is an array of steel cables that run down the sides and the bottom of the canal, and they disperse a low-voltage electric current. And so when fish try to swim through that, they kind of get a shock, and they don't like it. So they swim away, and they don't swim through. In addition, there's a variety of monitoring and fish harvesting activities going on in the Illinois River to detect where carp are, where that sort of the leading edge of the population is. And the state and federal agencies have contracted with commercial fishermen to harvest carp in the Illinois River to sort of tamp down their population and kind of beat back that population of carp to keep them away from the barrier and away from from Lake Michigan. So those are very important efforts that are underway. We're currently spending upwards of $50 million a year to monitor for and control Asian carp. We have a technique called eDNA, or environmental DNA monitoring, that they're doing in the system that can detect the presence of Asian carp DNA. And that's been a very important tool for telling us where there is a potential presence of Asian carp. And as you mentioned, several years ago, a single Asian carp was caught in Lake Calumet, which is above the barriers on the wrong side. In addition, there's been numerous positive detections of carp DNA on the wrong side of the barrier. So this has really alarmed our region and is raising concerns that that electric barrier might not be adequate to keep Asian carp out of the Great Lakes in the long term. Now, currently, there is no evidence that there is an established reproducing population of carp above the barriers or anywhere in the Great Lakes. So we believe that there is time to take other measures to keep Asian carp out, and that we can do that. But we need to maintain our vigilance in the monitoring and the control efforts we're doing now. And we also believe that in the long term, the best permanent solution to keeping Asian carp out of the Great Lakes is to permanently separate the Great Lakes from the Mississippi River watershed in the Chicago area. And so that was the focus of the study that we just completed in January about options for implementing that separation. So that's just some background, Mike. I hope that's helpful. Do you have other questions?
Yes. Just one second.
Let's just break for a quick commercial from one of our sponsors, and then we'll go into questions and discovery if we could. Beth, do you want to go ahead and play the commercial?
Ken and Karen Schuler are at the helm of Trawlers Midwest today. Ken and Karen Schuler are at the helm of Trawlers Midwest Incorporated. They list and sell trawlers all over the U.S. and Canada, carrying the largest list of trawlers found anywhere. Trawlers ranging from pocket trawlers to long-range cruising trawlers with multiple staterooms will meet the needs of many different buyers and different budgets. In-stock Ranger tug trawlers are available for immediate purchase. If you're interested in a brokerage trawler, they will help you find the right one for your planned usage. They sell the dreams, you build the memories. For information, visit www.trawlersmidwest.com. Trawlers Midwest is a proud Commander sponsor of AGLCA.
Okay, again, if anyone has any questions or comments for Matt or Mike, the call-in number is 877-497-1815. Okay, Mike, I know you had some questions that you'd like Matt to address. Do you want to go ahead with that?
Yes, and in the spirit of making people wait for the stuff they really want to hear, I'm going to ask Matt first about the nets that they were trying to get installed, but that were shut down, I guess, by the U.S. Supreme Court. Could you tell us a little bit about this?
Well, Mike, because of the alarm over the potential threat from Asian carp, as we started detecting their DNA above, you know, on the wrong side of the barriers, there have been several lawsuits from a number of Great Lakes states against the state of Illinois and the Army Corps of Engineers to take more drastic, immediate actions to close the flow of water to keep Asian carp out, and they called for a number of measures, including the closure of navigation locks in the Chicago area, the installation of nets, and other actions. The Great Lakes Commission itself was not a party to those lawsuits, but they do really demonstrate how alarmed the region is. Our belief is that in the long term, those actions by themselves are probably not adequate. Also, there's concerns about the impacts on commercial boating, recreational boating, and also flood control in the Chicago area. The Chicago area waterways are used for a number of purposes, such as commercial and recreational boating, managing flood water during heavy storm events, and also for wastewater disposal. So it's a very complicated system, and just taking simple measures like closing the locks really is not a sustainable solution because of the impacts it would have on other uses of the system.
Great. And the I guess, bring us up to date on what the obviously they no one wants to close off the waterway for commerce or for recreational use, but the plan, from the way I understand it, will be a combination for commercial entities to be able to transfer goods from basically one side to the other once the permanent barrier is in place. And if you would go through what the different ideas for how to allow pleasure craft, especially boats between the sizes of, let's say, you know, 35 feet to 70 feet, once the barriers are in place. And I guess we should start with, you know, when is this supposed to happen?
Well, what we did is we conducted a study on options for separating the watersheds by placing barriers or dams in the waterways. So we hired a consulting firm with experience in a number of different disciplines, engineering, water quality, hydrology, et cetera, to look at the various issues. And as I mentioned, it's a very complex system. It's heavily used for a variety of purposes. So, you know, anything you do to it is going to have a variety of impacts, and our study was intended to look at all of those impacts. And ultimately what we wanted was options for separation that would prevent the open flow of water and therefore prevent the movement of Asian carp and other aquatic invasive species, but to do that in a way that maintained the ability to move cargo, to move recreational boats, to manage stormwater during heavy storm events, and to dispose of wastewater and maintain or improve water quality. So we need to achieve all those goals. So we came up with three options that involved putting anywhere from 1 to 5 physical barriers or dams in the waterway system at various points. And we did this to really illustrate the impacts and the pros and cons of different approaches and different arrays of barriers depending on where you put them. So, and again, all this was done with a mind towards preventing the movement of invasive species, but also maintaining the ability of the system to provide the benefits that it does today for recreational boating, commercial navigation, flood control, water quality, and wastewater management. So it's critical to bear in mind that we want to achieve all of those with our separation options. Now, with regard to recreational boats, we do recognize that there are thousands of recreational boats that move through that system every year. Many of them are local to the Chicago area, sailboats and powerboats that move through the river system. They might, on a seasonal basis, move from marinas where they're stored inland, move through the river, and be moored at marinas on Lake Michigan. Of course, for your listeners, there are people who might be transiting through the system through the Great Loop. So we definitely want to maintain the ability for those boaters to pass through the system. So what our options include are provisions for boat lifts or other mechanisms to move recreational boats over those barriers so they can continue to pass through. Now, the study we did was at a fairly high level. We didn't get into a lot of specific technologies, but our consultants who looked at this have assured us that that there are technologies available to move and transport any type of recreational boat that's currently in use over those barriers. And so we've provided for that. Obviously, moving forward, there need to be a lot more analysis about how you would build that, where it would go, how it would function, and a lot of other details that would need to be worked out. In terms of timing, we project that we could have barriers in place and fully implemented in about 20 years. As I said, this is a very, very complex issue. There's a lot of issues to be worked out to ensure that we don't flood downtown Chicago, to upgrade wastewater treatment plants so that they can discharge to the waterway system and ultimately into Lake Michigan. So there's a lot of issues to work out. It's not going to happen overnight, but we do think that we could have this system in place, these barriers in place within about 20 years. Now, right now, these are just options that we've put out for public discussion. There's no, at this point, this has not been formally adopted by anyone, any government agency. We're hoping that through discussion with federal agencies, the state of Illinois, the state of Indiana, the city of Chicago, and other partners, that we can continue to refine these ideas, these options, and eventually reach consensus on the best option and then move forward with it. But there's a lot of work yet to be done. There's no specific schedule in place, but we feel that our report and the options that we put out there are really going to significantly advance this discussion and help move us toward a solution that will safeguard the Great Lakes from Asian carp, but also maintain the benefits that the system currently provides.
Matt, is that soon enough?
Well,
20 years is a long time. Do you think the carp will, we can live with the situation for that long?
Well, we are concerned about that. We do feel that we need to expedite and accelerate this process as much as possible. But at the same time, we do believe that the aggressive monitoring and control actions that are underway now are buying us time to come up with this long-term solution. So we do believe that if we are vigilant with these control efforts that we're doing now, that we do have time. But we do need to move forward aggressively, so we are concerned about that.
One other question that comes to mind, is there any estimate of the, I mean, it sounds like it's massive, the cost and how it's going to be funded?
Well, our options estimated a cost of between about $3 billion and $9 billion. Depending on where, how many barriers you build, where you put them, and the other kind of actions that needed to be taken to mitigate for the impacts of putting those barriers in. And what's ironic is that the cost of the barriers themselves, the cost of just kind of building a dam in the river, is actually, you know, a fairly small part of the overall cost of implementing separation. The cost of the barriers for the three alternatives range from about $109 million to about $140 million. So the vast majority of the costs of separation come from the other things you need to do to manage floodwater, maintain water quality, and provide for transportation. So that's where the big dollars come in.
Uh-huh.
Our study didn't specifically look at funding options and sort of who would pay. We expect that that the cost of separation likely would be divided amongst a number of different entities, federal agencies that have jurisdiction over the waterway, Corps of Engineers, Coast Guard. Likely there would be investments in wastewater treatment plants, which would be the responsibility of the local wastewater treatment authority. We think there likely would be some public-private partnerships to invest in ports and marinas and improve the infrastructure in that area. So the cost likely would be divided amongst a number of entities and spread over many years. So while it does appear to be large numbers, those costs will be dispersed among a number of entities and over a number of years. So, in fact, what we found that at a regional level, if you look at the cost of the least expensive alternative, it would cost households in the Great Lakes region about $1 per month or just about $12 annually from 2012 to 2059. Now, if you add the households in the Mississippi River Basin, it reduces that cost to just $4 a year during that time frame. So we think that that really is when you put it in that context, that those costs are reasonable and doable. And you need to compare that to the potential impacts of Asian carp and other aquatic invasive species on the Great Lakes, as well as on the Mississippi River watershed. And we have a $7 billion commercial and recreational fishing industry in the Great Lakes, and that could be devastated by Asian carp. So, you know, although there is a cost of separation, we feel it's reasonable, it's something we can bear, and we can't afford not to safeguard the Great Lakes.
When you put it in that context, it definitely sounds manageable. I would imagine there'll be some kind of transport fee to get the commercial barges and the pleasure boats, cruisers, over the barriers that could help fund it.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, those are all options that we need to look at. And again, we didn't get into a lot of detail about how to cover the costs, but those things definitely need to be sorted out and done in a way that spreads the costs and makes it equitable for everybody who's involved.
Okay, that's great. It's very, very interesting. Mike, do you have anything else you'd like to add or ask?
We always have the question about whether it will be accommodating during the construction. As far as the plans are, that cruising boaters would be able to get through any time during the boating season, or whether they'd expect that there would be construction delays during those times.
Well, Mike, we didn't get into a lot of detail about, you know, construction schedules and phasing and things of that nature. Again, there's a lot of details like that that need to be sorted out. I would expect and hope that as those plans are developed, that we would be able to find ways to avoid or minimize disruption to commercial and recreational boating. There may be ways to phase it or provide alternative approaches for getting through the system. So we think those that can be managed, and obviously it's an important consideration.
Just one more question.
Whoops.
If between the time now and the time they start considering starting the construction, if let's say Asian carp should get a hold in the lakes, would it be a possibility that this would just be the project would just be stopped?
Well, we certainly hope that won't happen, but I want to point out that that the Chicago Waterway System is a kind of an open pathway in both directions for all sorts of invasive species. And so, obviously, the immediate concern is preventing Asian carp from getting into Lake Michigan from the Illinois River. But we need to recognize that invasive species can also move the other direction into the Mississippi River, and other invasive species that may be approaching the Great Lakes from the Mississippi River watershed can continue to come through that system. So it's an open door that we need to shut down, not only to protect us against Asian carp, but to protect the Great Lakes and the Mississippi River from other invasive species that might be moving in either direction. And toward that point, the Army Corps of Engineers is doing a large study on separating the two watersheds and looking at the various issues involved. And as a part of their study, they identified 39 aquatic invasive species that are already present in either the Great Lakes or the Mississippi River watershed that they view have a high risk of passing through the Chicago waterway system, either from the Great Lakes into the Mississippi River or the other way around. And these are species that they are predicting would have a heavy impact on either of those water bodies. So it's definitely about more than just Asian carp. We want to protect the Great Lakes and the Mississippi River in the long term from any invasive species that might pass through that system. In addition, I would point out that the waterway system already faces significant problems with water quality, with flooding, and with accommodating commercial navigation. So there are significant opportunities for investments and improvements in all these areas, and our separation alternatives would help advance that. So there are a lot of reasons to advance separation and advance the kind of investments and improvements that we've put forth beyond just stopping Asian carp.
Great.
Steve, have a question?
Yeah, the question that I have is, are there other pathways for the invasive species to get into the Great Lakes?
Well, there definitely are, Steve, and that's a very good question, and it's a huge priority for us as a region to close down all these pathways through which Asian carp and other aquatic invasive species can get into the Great Lakes. One pathway is through ballast water in commercial vessels that come into the Great Lakes through the St. Lawrence Seaway. These are vessels that come in from around the world. They come into the seaway system. They pass through locks coming down the St. Lawrence River and into the Great Lakes. And that's been one of the most common pathways for invasive species such as zebra mussels to get into the Great Lakes. And we as a region are working hard to develop standards and treatment options for ballast water that is in commercial vessels to prevent that as being a vector or a pathway through which invasive species can get in. In addition, there are a number of other pathways connecting the Great Lakes to the Mississippi River, and the Corps of Engineers is studying those. They've identified, I believe, 18 potential connections between the Great Lakes and the Mississippi River Basin through different canals and rivers and whatnot. And as a part of their study, they've identified those, and they're coming up with plans for shutting down those pathways. But it's important to point out that right now we believe that the Chicago area waterway system is the most significant pathway connecting the Great Lakes to the Mississippi River. There's a continuous large-scale flow of water, and I think the expert opinion is that this is the most likely pathway through which Asian carp are going to get into the Great Lakes, and so we definitely need to focus on that. But, yes, we also need to close down those other pathways, and we're looking at that.
Is there any evidence of Asian carp in those other pathways?
There is Asian carp in some of those other pathways. For example, the Wabash River in Indiana, in the headwaters of that river, there's a marsh called Eagle Marsh, And when that marsh floods during, you know, the rainy season, there's a threat that it can link up with the headwaters of the Maumee River, which, of course, flows then from northeast Indiana through northwest Ohio down into Lake Erie at Toledo. And so we know that there are carp, Asian carp, in the Wabash River, and that is one potential connection. In response, the state of Indiana, together with the Corps of Engineers, has put in a fence there in that marsh to prevent fish from getting through. So that is a pathway that's an intermittent pathway that is only a threat when there's heavy flooding in that marsh. But it's one example of a pathway that we've identified, and we've taken action to shut it down. But we definitely need to continue to do that for those other connections.
Yeah, you know, when you start to talk about other pathways, it starts to seem unimaginable that you can shut everything down.
Well, we think we can. We're taking a close look at those other pathways. There's a lot of effort being focused on this. A lot of those other connections are intermittent, where there is only kind of periodic flow of water. Some of those are old canals that are no longer used. So we think it is feasible to shut those down, but we definitely need to focus on them and you know, take the time and effort and expense to do so.
Yes. I guess my closing comment would be it's a lot larger problem than I ever imagined.
Well, it is, and it's, as I said at the beginning of this conversation, you know, we've got a long history here in the Great Lakes suffering from the damage from invasive species, going back to the sea lamprey in the 1950s, which we're still combating today, to zebra mussels, to round gobies, to a variety of other species. And so we know how much damage they can do to the lakes, to the ecosystem, to the infrastructure, to boaters. It is a big issue. Asian carp is just the latest and perhaps the most alarming invasive species, but there's a number of different threats out there, and we just need to remain vigilant and safeguard against them as much as we can.
Well, thank you very much, Matt. You've been very, very informative. Mike, I want to thank you for putting this show together for us. Mike, again, is the news editor of Waterway Guide, who's a very, very valued sponsor. They're just so supportive of America's Great Loop. Next week, we're going to be coming live from the Palm Beach Boat Show. We'll have Captains Chris and Elise and a representative from PassageMaker tell us about the show and give recommendations on how to get the most from your visit. Matt and Mike, thank you again. Anyone who's interested, the shows are archived at www.greatloop.org. They're also available on the blog, our radio website, and you can also get them from iTunes. I think we'll close for today, and again, many thanks to everyone who listens.
Thank you, Janice. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.